Hey, it's Wednesday. Coming up next on Ham Nation, let's talk about loop antennas. We're going to have the solar update with Dr. T. Dale is back with Show Me Your Shack videos, and Valerie comes by and visits, and Amanda's on location. All that and more next on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation for November 7th, 2018. Loopy for loops.
Hi, everybody. It's Ham Nation time, and I'm Bob Heil, and we're in the Ozarks tonight, back here with all the gear and the station, and been working on some projects, which I'm going to show you one in a minute for just a real quickie here. But first, let's find out who all's here. First of all, here is Dale. He's back. Dale, really nice to see you. Hi. How you doing?
Hi, Bob. Good to see you from the Yellow Brick Road.
Yay. Yay. All right. We come back because I know you got stuff for us. And what's happened, Gordo? You got somebody with you, too, right?
I do. It's a reappearance of Jim Ford in 6JF. What are we going to build tonight, Jim?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about loop antennas.
Loops. Everything you want to know about loops, Bob.
Yes, yes. All right. And Don, you have room for a loop?
I have 10 acres, and I'm just loopy for a loop. Hey, did you vote? I voted. I hope you did, too.
Yeah, we did. We did. Well, there's a lot to go tonight, man. We got a big packed show, as usual. But I just had to show you guys what happened. A couple of years ago, I went to the Joplin Ham Fest. And one of my morning group that we meet every morning, he had some stuff, and he had this transmitter. And he said, it came from an estate, and he said, I probably am not going to get rid of it because nobody will want it. And he said, what do you think, $10? And I said, yeah, look at this. And what's even crazier, it was complete with the article from 1958, Lou McCoy. A lot of you young hams would not know Lou, but go look up his old stuff. He did fabulous stuff. Anyway, this was one of the transmitters he built, 1958, and it didn't work. So I thought, well, that's all right. That's 2 years ago. Well, day before yesterday, I started cleaning out this place, and I thought, well, let's take a look. Let's find out. So, I looked inside here, and what did I find? Well, first of all, the line cord was really bad. Of course, I fixed that. That was easy. You always want to do that, by the way. If you get a piece of used gear, check the line cord. But you notice up here, there's a dual cap that's in a can, and one of those was disconnected. Going, this wasn't in there. That's interesting. I come back and look a little further. The fuse was blown and broken out. So I put a new fuse holder in. I keep trailing on down. The screen resistor was disconnected and the plate resistor, which told me that he probably had a short in that can, but right away thought it meant the tube. So he starts disconnecting things from the tube. There was the culprit. I took my own meter and I checked the cans, both sides of the ground. That one was shorted, absolutely a piece of ground. So I went to my junk box that I have for the pine board stuff, and I used one of the filter caps from it, take it loose from there, put it back together, da-de-da, and I'm going, I wonder. So I hastily turned it on, and I thought, are we going to have smoke, or what's going to happen here? And so, of course, we have to put a dummy load on it. My trusty dummy load is a 50-watt bulb in this case. I think it might be 60-watt. And I had a crystal from the pine board days, 3885. So what else you got to have? Huh? Something you guys don't see much of around here, one of these things. Oh, my gosh. And I plugged it in. And I go, looky here. And, you know, we talked about before, and we need to get into this tonight again. You'll notice how I can increase the load a little bit and resonate the plate, increase the load, and we have full output. How about that? And the guy, they were going to throw it away, and the other guy said, here, I'll take it, and then he sold it to me for $10. So when you go to a ham fest, this is the bottom line of this story. When you go to a ham fest, look around and see things. See, I thought, wow, that transformer's worth $40, and the tubes, if they were good, well, no, the whole transmitter. So what would that cost? Several hundred. I got me a 50-watt, 40-meter CW rig. You know what I'm going to do with it tomorrow? I have a modulator up there. That booger's going to be on our AM net tomorrow. Yep. And we could get into all kinds of, but I just had to show you because I'm really, really excited about some of the things I'm seeing at Hamfest today. A lot of guys are throwing stuff out. Don't do that. So there you are. That's my story, and I'm going to stick to it. But check it out when you get out to some of these ham fests. I'm going to be at Nixa Saturday, a little fest south of here, but we'll find some stuff, I bet you. So, Dale, I bet you have found a lot of stuff as you go around, and boy, I'm just really glad to see you're back and feeling good. So I bet you got some stuff for us, so let's see what kind of videos you brought.
Okay, we can take a look. Well, we're feeling a little better. Had another rhinitis attack last night, so a little bit of sleep deprivation, but we're ready to rock and roll here with the videos this evening. We've got two, but first I'd like to thank Dan, N9LVS, for producing a new episode of Show Us Your Shack during my absence. I know how much work it takes to assemble a nice shack presentation. Used to spend about 5 or 6 hours selecting the shack photos that came in, editing them with Lightroom to try to have a consistent contrast and color variation across all of the slides, and then cropping the photos into a coherent presentation. So thank you, Dan. We appreciate it. Our second video tonight will feature a SODA activation in Vermont. We'll talk about that acronym later, but right now, here's Dan's first episode of Show Us Your Shack.
This is Show Us Your Shack, a compilation of ham shacks just like yours. We start off with Bob, WA2YDV. He's got a neat little shack. Just have to open the doors. Where Bob's primary radio is an ICOM 706. He also has numerous antennas connected to the balcony at his house. James, W6LG, likes Elecraft. He's got two K3 transceivers, a P3 pan adapter, a KP500 amplifier, and a KAT500 antenna tuner. He also has some old Drake equipment that he recently restored. His primary antennas are two monoband 20-meter beams, and a 10-meter beam as well, not to mention numerous wire antennas, including homemade verticals. James, K8JHR, is a Tentec guy. His station consists of an Orion 2, an Orion 7, and a Tentec amplifier, not to mention a Yaesu DX3000. And in the backyard, it's a 20-meter dipole, as well as a 40-6 off-center fed dipole, and a 15-meter dipole as well, not to mention a 6-meter beam and various wire antennas. Now David, W2ZZA, and his wife Sandy, KC2LGK, are definite ICOM fans, including an IC-756 Pro, an IC-751, an IC-271, and an IC-910, just to mention a few. David actually set up a little block diagram, so he knows which goes where. He also has a few antennas in the backyard. Antennas consist of a 6-meter Yagi, a 10-meter vertical, an 80-meter dipole, two G5 RVs, a 70-meter Yagi, a 2-meter Yagi, and numerous vertical antennas. Russell, WA4KCN, and his wife April, KE5RYC, have this nice little setup. The main station consists of an ICOM 7800 and an Alpha 89 amplifier, not to mention the vintage station, which consists mostly of Collins and Swan equipment. In the backyard, on 100-foot Roan Tower, sits an OptiBeam 18-6 with three elements on 40. And on the 90-foot tower sits a 4-element, 6-band, 40-10 quad. Francis, WV2M, has a really cool setup. It consists of a TS-2000, a TS-590, and an Elecraft K3. And in the backyard is an MFJ-2990, 43-foot vertical, as well as a Ventana for VHF. William, AB4BJ, has a very cool station as well. The main radio on his station is an ICOM 7851. That's connected to a Step IR, Big IR, Mark III in the backyard. Pat, W2COS, has a Flex 6500, an Elecraft K3 with a pan adapter as a backup rig, as well as an ICOM 7300. For VHF and UHF, he uses a Kenwood 71A. Bruce, W2BAT, has a nice rack-mounted setup, which consists primarily of a Kenwood TS-2000, as well as a Fusion repeater. Ken, W3XAF, has quite the mobile operation. On HF, he not only runs the Tar Heel antenna, but he also has a Hustler antenna as well. And then for VHF and UHF, there's a Comet antenna right on the roof. One look inside, and this guy is very serious. Radios consist of a Yaesu 857D, as well as many other radios. Craig, K4IA, runs an Elecraft K3 with an Elecraft KAP500. For his antennas, he uses a Mosley Tiger Ray mounted on the chimney, as well as a radio wave super loop that's put in some trees. And that is Show Us Your Shack. If you want your shack profiled on an upcoming Show Us Your Shack, send the pictures or video to hamnationvideos at twit.tv. I hope you've enjoyed this video, and 7-3 from N9LVS.
Okay, Dan, thank you very much. Great job, man. A lot of fantastic shacks, and like a lot of those antennas, too. So, hey, we got lucky last week just after Bob called and asked me if I could come back on Ham Nation this evening. I received a video from Mickey. He's NY2MC, lives in Glen Falls, New York. And he'd put together a video featuring the activation of a SODA. Now, if you're unfamiliar with that acronym, it stands for Summits on the Air. This one's on Northeast Mountain, and that's in Vermont. Mickey helped activate the mountain with a half a dozen hams, and they all had a great time, as you'll see in Mickey's video. Let's take a look now at the activation of Northeast Mountain.
Hi, everybody. This is Mickey, NY2MC. A few friends and I activated Northeast Mountain in Vermont for Summits on the Air. After a short hike up a steep, rocky access road and a brief stop to have a few wild raspberries, we arrived at the top. I activated on 5-2 from my handheld.
See if anybody else is out there. This is NY2MC, calling CQ, CQ, CQ on 5-2.
After making a few contacts, stopped over to see Dave, KD2LMR. Watched him throw his antenna line up into the tree.
Nice.
How about that?
I'll go with that one. That's pretty good. That's pretty high up in there.
And with a shot like that, no wonder he had no problem making lots of contacts.
KD to 2 LMR, K2R, okay. Roger, Bill. I'm running an ICOM 7,100 watts up here on the mountain elevation, about 2,000 feet. And I've got a dipole up in the tree right now that I'm using. I'm hoping I'm as clear to you as you are to me, because you're coming loud and clear.
Across the field here, we find Bernie and Ron racking up some contacts of their own.
Kilo India 4, Norway Sugar Papa, big signal, 5x9 plus a bunch. And you're a good signal up here on Northeast Mountain in Wells, Vermont.
Roger, please confirm your call sign.
My call is November 1, November, Delta, November. Name is Bernie.
Roger, good copy. Name is Tom. Tango Oscar Mike. Tango Oscar Mike. On the coast of North Carolina, and you're a quality honest 5-8. Great contact. Thanks much. Good luck.
Roger that. We're portable up here on the mountain. I'm running a link dipole from Soda Beams and 100 watts portable. Yaesu FT891 is the radio. 7-3. N1 NDN portable, Summit's on the air. QRZ any station.
Wow, look at that. How many of you would like a view like that from your ham shack? Here we have Tom, N2TOM, enjoying some lunch and listening to 10 meters. What's in your bag, Tom?
The radio is a Yaesu 891. Good radio, sounds good, works good. But the menus are about 7 or 8 layers deep. And the tough part of that is trying to find what you want to find. So that's why I carry these two with me and I refer to them regularly. Because there's more features in there than you can imagine. And without this, you're lost.
And you always carry that to the top of every mountain.
yep. They've been up all the mountains right here.
Nice.
The antenna of that is a wind camp, off-center fed dipole. I've had that on quite a few mountains, and it's pretty much my antenna of choice now. I've used NFEDs and regular dipoles, all kinds of things, but this one will tune from 6 to 40, all in one package. So that's less stuff to carry. And less stuff to carry up a mountain is always a good thing.
And what good is a gathering of hams without a little bit of ham hijinks?
W2PLK.
W2PLK, this is KD2LMR.
KD2LMR, you're coming through very well. You're maybe 3-5.
Okay, roger. What is your location? I'm on Northeast Mountain, Summit's on the air in Vermont.
Just read it to me here.
I'm on W1GM053. Actually, I'm on the northeast part of Northeast Mountain.
Very good. Awesome. I appreciate the contact.
Okay, I'll walk up there and say hi to you.
Okay, all right, very good. All right, this is KD2LMR. Thank you for the contact. We'll see you shortly.
We all had a great time activating Northeast Mountain. Check out Summits on the Air and activate your local summit. 7-3s.
That's a great one. I like the humor there on the end. Thanks, Mickey. Let's talk about that video a second. We appreciate the fact that Mickey followed all the rules for producing a Ham Nation video. He did not use any music. You might wonder why you don't want to use music. Well, many ham TV stations rebroadcast Ham Nation, and they cannot broadcast music. And he produced just the right amount of narration and live sound to tell the story, especially for our audio-only Ham Nation podcast listeners. So great job, Mickey. Thanks a million. We really appreciate that video. It was fantastic tonight. That about wraps it up for tonight. Hopefully we'll be back in the near future with another issue of the Ham Nation video segment. About that, though, we're dependent on you, the Ham Nation viewer, to send us your shack photos and your videos. Just as a matter of choice here, rather than search the web for videos we think might be of interest, we believe that the Ham Nation video segment should be reserved for Ham Nation viewers who want to show their activities to other Ham Nation viewers. If you have questions about producing a video, please send me an email, and we'll be glad to help you out. We'll be back when there are new videos or shows, slideshows or shack photos to show, and that'll allow us to produce another episode of Show Us Your Shack. Takes around 20 photos, so that would be maybe at least 10 ham shacks with a couple of photos each to produce a good episode. Again, it's been great to be back. Hope we'll be able to spotlight your shack on another video soon. And let's check in now with Gordo. He's out in Southern California. Going to talk about loop antennas there with Jim. He'll have a brand new episode of Short Shots also. Gordo, semper paratus.
Well, thank you, Dale, and same to you as a fellow Coast Guard auxiliarist and with the U.S. Coast Guard. We so much appreciate you coming back. And Dan, wow, great photos. Well, you've been seeing it in a lot of magazines. CQ talks about it in their latest issue, and I'm very happy to say CQ is now coming back stronger than ever, and that is wonderful. Of course, DX Engineering has it, talking all about loop antennas. So, Victor, if you don't mind, let's go ahead and Jim and I will explore loops. Now, a small magnetic loop antenna can be receive only or transmit. And the transmit is critical because there's a lot of stuff that's slightly different in the transmitting loop than just the receiving loop. So what we see here is about 1/8 wavelength for uniform current distribution throughout the loop as a lumped inductance. That's the loop itself. Maximum power will be a figure eight in the plane of the loop. So right now, if we were to look at that loop, we're not hearing much power. And the short whip or a short dipole is capacitive, and we normally load them with inductance. This lowers the Q, ups the losses, and conversely, for the very high Q and lower losses found in the loop does a marvelous job when tuned in properly. And Jim's going to tell us all about what it takes the mic make the right type of loop. So narrow bandwidth, maybe only 10 kilohertz at 7 megs, but the high Q parallel tuned circuit in a loop gives us incredible gain. Now, to minimize lumped I squared R conductor and capacitor losses that go up in heat, and of course, going up in heat means losing energy, here's a ham that homebrew the losses to a minimum by using wide copper windings and a vacuum variable capacitor, and this is going to give high intrinsic radiation efficiency. Now, these loops can take about 100 watts of power or less. These, and Bob, you remember seeing them at Xenia, Ohio Hamvention. This particular loop can take probably 300 to 400 watts because there are tens of amps circulating within this loop. And notice at the very top of the loop are the big capacitors. And the capacitors are the key to making a loop antenna play. And of course, the nice thing about a loop like this is that it's portable. It doesn't mind being at least a loop above the ground, no lower than that, but just one loop distance from the ground is all it takes because the loop does not rely specifically on ground currents. And the loop has both a low as well as a high angle of radiation, and one wavelength loops, the really huge ones that Bob and Don are going to put around their property, they radiate perpendicular to the plane, but this vertically polarized magnetic field within this loop is going to radiate in the loop direction that you see it there. So think of the loop as like a magnetic dipole, whereas an ordinary dipole is an electric. So the higher the Q, the lower the noise, and on transmit, that means no harmonics, and that's a neat thing. Now, loop efficiency is equal to conductor tube diameter and conductivity of skin effect. So the loop of those pliable loops that are great for packing in your vehicle, or as Tracy of the MTARA team does, he sticks it all in a neat backpack with the Alex loop. Flexible conductor low loss coax is a great way to go, remembering that a square root of frequency law. So the better the conductivity of the loop itself, the better that we're going to have a good signal being radiated. Well, a fat tubular conductor with the within the loop element that's smooth and is going to have almost no eddy currents. And you may say, oh, it's not copper, it's aluminum. Well, aluminum has a DC ohmic resistance of only 1.6 a copper, that is DC, but the RF skin effect of both copper and aluminum are close. Copper, the skin effect, the signal only gets 20 microns into the conductor, whereas the aluminum is only a mere 26 into the conductor. But what really makes the difference on the loop antenna with a solid conductor is this right here, and that is the junction between the two conductors with nothing more than a wing nut and maybe a couple of washers that are seated well. Because the magnetic loop has great radiation, but resistance of just a few hundred milliohms, one added milliohm will equal one loss of efficiency. So that's why we want to make sure that any loop connection that you see like this is going to work out as a very low resistance conductor. So the loop at each end of this particular circuit goes to a series capacitor, transformer coupled, and the unshielding coupling loop, that's the one that we put the coax into, is ready to roll. And Jim is here. And Jim, how about telling us what you do on your homebrew loop out of copper to make sure that each and every one of those octagonal joints is not going to have high resistance? Jim?
Well, this is an eight, of course, this is an eight section made out of 10 feet of, I think, 0.9 inch diameter.
Wow.
Copper, and you braze those elements together with this. It's called silvalloy, and silvalloy is available for about $2 or $3 on eBay, and it's 80% copper, 15% silver, and I think 5% phosphorus, and you use a very, very hot braising to get it on there, but it's easy to do.
Wow. So now you have an octagonal loop, not quite as efficient as they say a round loop, but you've had good results with this, huh?
Absolutely. And that's great if you've got all the materials to bend all those, but if you do a good job, I think the difference is something like 5%. So it's really not a big penalty to pay there.
Wow. And as you'll see, Jim is able to get this in his vehicle. Now, the key to getting the signal to be inductively coupled to the loop is this 5-to-1 smaller loop, sometimes called the primary, very similar to the primary of a transformer. And the primary concentrates a magnetic flux lines, which cut the small untuned feed loop. And that equals higher Q, especially on 7 megahertz, but a slightly lower Q as we go higher in frequency, but the efficiency actually is greater. So the impedance of the main loop is independent of frequency, and this little feeder loop run right in line with the main loop is what it takes. And this little feeder loop comes in many different configurations. Jim, you did your own, huh?
Yes, I did. And that just a piece of RG8X, and it seems to work just fine.
Absolutely. And Jim and I did some playing around because we had read on the internet that you could reduce SWR slightly by mooshing around the bottom of the feeder loop. And yeah, we saw a change in the SWR, and that change did make a slight difference, but it really didn't in the performance. Now, when folks homebrew their own loops, this is wonderful. Because remember, these small loops will work great in a condominium backyard where you're not allowed an antenna, yet the loop will put out a signal almost equivalent to a half-wave dipole mounted too low to really be effective. And here we see that primary of the transformer feeder loop that is just above the bottom of the main loop. And that feeder loop placement is very important. Here's one held on simply by Velcro, and it's fine. And, you know, it didn't really seem to make a difference whether it actually contacted the main loop or not. It was just the inductive coupling that really makes a difference. And by the way, that main loop, the big part, is about a yard for covering 10, 15, and 20 meters. And it can also cover 40 meters, but you're going to need a larger, about a 2 meter diameter if you want to get to 60 meters and maybe 80 meters. And if you plan to do 160 meters, I mean, your efficiency on a loop is not going to be more than a micron of 1%, but nonetheless, it would have to be as high as 4 meters in diameter. And critical is keep that inner loop perfectly aligned with the outer loop. The inner loop is inductively coupling to the outer loop, and it must be perfectly in line. Now, this is Carl Lavoie of Chameleon, and I said, Carl, can you set us up? Jim was watching in a few seconds or less, a few minutes or less, and bingo, he did. And that's using coaxial cable. I think it's LMR 400 with a solid conductor. So we have good symmetry of that outer loop. And again, the feeder loop is that loop that is on the top. Now, on the bottom is the tuning capacitor. Well, he's got calibration lines as well as a toggle switch. The lines were not perfectly calibrated, but you tune that big knob quickly, and when you hear the noise really come up, that's your sweet spot. Now, for 40 meters and 60 meters, where Dale and I work U.S. Coast Guard auxiliary comms, we flip the switch, and I believe that's going to add on to the left what is probably, it's supposed to be secret, a capacitor that adds more capacitive reactants to get us down there. Now, this is John Miller, N7 Juliet Delta Mike. He is the one that is very familiar with what's inside the sealed box. And you can contact John at support@chameleonantenna.com. And he's a real good guy, and he says it like it is. So if you're having a problem, especially with one of his loops, he'll tell you what the deal is. Jim, I'm looking at it, and it looks like his feed loop is not in line with the main loop, but maybe he's doing that on purpose. Jim, what have we got here on your homebrew loop?
Well, on top there, that's a fixed capacitor in parallel with the variable, which is necessary for 40 meters. So if I do 40 meters, I put that on and take it off. This is at the top of the loop. And some designs have it on the top, which has got an advantage and disadvantage. The pro is that you don't have to have any magnetic decoupling from the coax if the loop is on the bottom. But, of course, when it's on the top, you got something that's top-heavy. So pros and cons like everything else.
Oh, that's great, Jim. And, Jim, here's another closer look of what we've got going on with that great connection at the top of the loop. And we'll get to that in just a moment. Victor, if you'll go to that next slide-a-rooney. There we go. Jim, what have you got the copper foil on?
Well, that's right across the aluminum section. This is a two-section capacitor, and the capacitor the connections are not to the rotation portion or the rotator. It's to reduce any losses because of the rotating joints. So RF does go through the aluminum, so it's bypassed by copper and reduce the losses.
Wow. Well, you've done a great job of that, Jim. And now tell us about the makeup of the capacitor. Boy, it looks pretty close for more than a few 20 or 30 watts, huh, on this one?
Well, these are actually, it's two 200 picofarad, 2,000 volt capacitors. And when you hook them in series and just to take the connections from both ends, then it becomes 100 picofarads and 4,000 volts.
And wow, so likely we could run maybe 50 or 60 watts?
Well, I did okay with 100 on 40 meters, so I think that's, but it calculates to almost, just very close to 4,000 volts.
Wow. Well, that's terrific. And, of course, we encourage all of you to think about making up your own. And there are so many great websites. Bless that article in CQ, current issue of CQ, that talks about the relative efficiency of a small loop that you can put in your backyard. But this is great where they're using wide copper foil as well as that vacuum variable. So, Jim, you do what? You're tuning in on 40 of the smaller variable capacitor, right?
Yes, that variable capacitor is always in there, and that's the one that'll tune from about 10 megahertz all the way to, I think it's 28.7 or something like that, without the top one. By the way, the top one's about 140 picofarads, and it's also rated, I think it's 5,000 volts.
Wow. So next time you're at a swap meet, be sure and find an extra one for Gordo and Jim. And Jim, what do we got here?
That's the tuning indicator. Should you, you use that, but it works.
Yeah, a little NE2 neon. I bet it lights up nice and bright, and you've done a great job with that. Now, here's a motorized one that we have at Quartz Fest each year, and it's remote controlled, so they can go ahead and do the tuning via remote. And for those that are thinking, gosh, this might work great in the attic or in my backyard, but I don't want to be running back and forth. Well, Chameleon has an answer, and I know other loop manufacturers do, and that is taking this particular device, tying it to a tripod, and one set of commands via the line will turn it, yet the other one will go ahead and tune it. So pretty neat that they have this little tripod that you could put in the backyard or up in the attic or somewhere where no one else will see it, and you're able to both tune as well as turn that loop antenna for best results. Now, you can also do it via the Chameleon down at the base, and they have a little adapter that instead of your hand, it is that automatic one. And Jim, how'd we do on comparison between like the $500 loop in the far ground and your relatively straightforward loop in the foreground, Jim?
I think I did pretty good. I think they both work fine. But I mean, mine's copper, and it's maybe even a couple inches bigger, but it did good.
It did. And what we always encourage is be sure and watch the RF eddy currents that can creep down the feed line. Right, Jim?
That's right. And that's the reason why I have my loop on the bottom. You don't have to do that because it's below. And that's one advantage of having the loop on the bottom versus the top.
So you're not going to need a whole handful of chokes to try and get rid of that. In fact, the Amidon Mix 43 or Amidon Mix 61 with a mu of 850 allows that RF to stop right at the chokes, and even a little wrap like that will help. But this is what we do to keep any eddy currents from transferring over to the loop. Now, Jim, how about the Q down on 40 meters? So we got like 100 kilohertz?
Well, I think it's more like 13 or 14 kilohertz for 2-to-1.
Here we are on 72, 95 and a half, perfect SWR. And when we go up maybe or down a few kilohertz, what happens?
Oh, there is 2-to-1 right there.
So this really points out that the loop has great efficiency, spot-on frequency on transmit and receive. And on receive, the magnetic loop does not pick up electrical vertically polarized signals because it is magnetically. Now, we compared the loop to the Hi-Q antenna on the back of my wagon. And first thing we discovered was the loop was too close to the wagon. We've got to keep that loop absolutely in the clear, as you'll see in just a moment in Jim's backyard. But you can see that the tuning is on the bottom and the matching is on the top. And for Chameleon, they have both the hard aluminum loop as well as one that, as Tracy will recommend, that has coaxial cable that allows you to go ahead and take it. And, of course, when you're tuning the loop, you got to tune it and then what, step back a bit?
Absolutely. You interact with everything.
So here's a fellow in the tuning process. There's Jim pointing out the portability. Does that fit in your car?
Yes, just barely.
And Darcy, his wife, loves that. It gets stowed in the trunk. So we encourage all of you to think about the possibilities of the loop. It does not have to, the portable loop does not have to be mounted more than one, not wavelength, but one loop distance from the earth. For those that have a great earth like sandy soil that we're going to have 2 weeks from now during our Thanksgiving on the air on 20 meters, 14335, we're going to be testing different loops. And you may hear Jim's loop, the Chameleon loop, and many of the other loops that you see advertised in the DX Engineering catalog. And so, Jim, the loop is in your backyard, and it's playing, huh?
Yeah, it seemed to be working good. And I also used a tripod of PVC just so it wouldn't, and this one before I did that, but just so that it wouldn't introduce any losses because of the tripod. Now, there's probably not a lot there, but I'm trying to pay attention to details here.
Wow. Well, that's a real detailed loop. And so 2 weeks from this Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, 14.335, Chip Margelli, K7JA, and Gordo will be comparing our loops to, well, not necessarily a two-element beam, but we're going to be comparing our loops to a regular dipole antenna. And here's Tracy. And Tracy and I were, and Susie and Jody, we're up in the mountains off of Highway 49, and we had a great time. And as you can see, his Alex loop set up in just moments. And because there's no metal around to detune it and create eddy currents, that loop just did a great job. So we sure encourage all of you. Jim, any final words on loops?
Experiment.
That's right. And have fun experimenting and see what works. Give signal reports. And 2 weeks from now, we'll look forward to hearing you on the air, 14.335 on Thanksgiving Day. So put down the turkey bones and get ready for the loop. Well, George, we showed a lot of the vacuum variables. I bet you have some on those powerful transmitters. So in just a moment, Jim, thank you, N6JF, for coming on board. And this is Gordo. George, how about those big vacuum variables? You must use those in the transmitters, huh?
Oh, yeah, we use those, Gordo. And those things get quite expensive, too, especially on, say, a 50 kilowatt. As a matter of fact, what they'll do a lot of times in transmitters, they have such a high voltage there that they'll just use a big fixed capacitor and then put an inductor in series with it to try to adjust the amount of capacitance that way. But yeah, vacuum variables, man, that's the way to go. If you can get them, use them. Well, we'll be back in just a moment, but first we've got a message from ICOM.
For the love of the holidays, surprise your favorite ham this season with the gift that's on their hot list. The holidays are just around the corner, and ICOM has plenty of cheer for everyone. IC7610, the SDR every ham wants, and just in time for the holidays. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR. RF direct sampling system, 110 RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. IC7300, changing the way entry-level HF is designed. This high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. ICR30, raise the bar on DC-to-daylight receivers. Powerful yet easy to use, the ICR30 is packed full of features you've come to expect from ICOM. Built-in GPS and Bluetooth, dual bandwidth recording, high-speed scan, and there's an Android and iOS app available. The perfect stocking stuffer, the ID51A Plus 2 provides new modes for extended D-Star coverage. Enjoy integrated GPS, independent AM/FM receiver, and free Android apps. Terminal and access point mode, send and receive text messages and pictures. DVFast data mode, and easy FM repeater setting. Visit ICOMAmerica/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win. After each episode of Ham Nation, go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation, register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, you'll be registered for the grand prize drawing for a new transceiver. And for October, we've got a winner of the IC2730A. Dual band, dual watch, analog transceiver. It's Andrew S. I don't know if Andrew's got a call sign or not. I didn't get that. But congratulations, Andrew. You're really going to like that radio. And if you don't have a call sign, get to studying. Because that's a nice rig there. For next month, we've got another rig here. This is going to be, well, it's not mine, but it's just like the one I use. It's the ID4100A entry-level D-Star Mobile with big rig features. It's a dual-band D-Star and analog transceiver. It's got an upgraded user-friendly interface, built-in GPS, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and there's an optional Bluetooth board and downloadable Android apps for Android and iOS app as well. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, last week I asked a question out of Gordo's book here. This one came out of the general class license study. I don't know, maybe Gordo's not paying attention, so we're going to give away one of his books. It's either going to be your choice of a general or an extra class study guide. The question was, which of the following might be useful in reducing RF interference to audio frequency devices? Is it a bypass inductor, a bypass capacitor, a forward bias diode, or a reverse bias diode? Well, we drew a lucky winner this afternoon, and it's Stephen Sarhut, KK6VZE. Stephen said it's a bypass capacitor. So congratulations, Stephen. Gordo is going to be sending you one of his study guides for general or extra class. And great, great study material. If you're looking to upgrade or looking to get into ham radio, check out one of Gordo's books. It's a premier resource for studying for your amateur license exams. Now, I've got another question for next week, and, well, this one, if you've got a screw loose on a terminal in a fuse box, not if you've got a screw loose, but if there's one on a terminal in a fuse box, what would happen with the temperature there? Would it increase or would it decrease? If you think you know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win one of these nice DX Engineering tote bags, courtesy of DX Engineering. Great heavy-duty canvas bag. Definitely something that you'll want for your next field day or outing adventure. Perfect for carrying that coax or whatever you need to carry. Hamnationcontest@gmail.com. Send your answer to me. Tell me what will happen if a screw is loose in a fuse box or terminal. Would the temperature increase or decrease? And now, you know, I had a segment prepared for tonight, but we're running a little long, so I'm going to hold that to next week. But let me just say, I got a new piece of test equipment this past week, and boy, I'm really excited about it. As a matter of fact, so excited that I can't even show it to you tonight. So we're going to hold that till next week, and there's a little teaser. I think you're going to enjoy it. One other thing before I get out of here, you know, we want to see what you're building, what your projects are. So if you've got some photos, no videos, but photos that you'd like to share with us, well, Randy K7AGE is looking for some to put together a little show us your project segment upcoming in the future. As we get those photos in, Randy will be editing them together. We want to know what you've been building, soldering, wrenching, or drilling. Just send your email and photos to k7age@outlook.com. And when we get enough here, Randy will have us show us your project segment coming up soon. And now, without further ado, let's go to Don and see what's going on in the news.
Yeah, no screws loose in my ham shack. However, I do have a loose nut behind the mic.
Ah, yep. I can see it.
Yep. It's a big one. Let's go ahead and get to the news of the week, shall we? From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2140, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, November 7th, 2018. A well-known ham and renowned contester has died in a tragic tower accident. Newsline anchor Jim Dameron, N8TMW, has more.
As Newsline went to production, the amateur radio community was rocked by the news that noted contester Paul Bittner, W0AIH, had suffered a fatal fall from a tower at his Superstations antenna farm near Eau Claire, Wisconsin. According to his longtime friend, Alan Schlaget, N9ISN, Paul had been working October 31st on his 180-foot tower when the rope broke. Paul fell 60 feet. Alan told Newsline that emergency responders were called and they pronounced him dead at the scene. A retired Lutheran minister, Paul had participated in the World Radio Sport Team Championship in Germany this past summer. He and Alan had competed together in the CQ Worldwide DX contest in October and had just posted a score of about 2.2 million points. Paul's many honors included induction in 2009 into the CQ Contest Hall of Fame. A ham for almost seven decades, Paul Bittner was 85.
The world's largest scouting event, Jamboree on the Air, is over, and all that remains now is the counting.
This week in Radio Scouting, another great Jamboree on the Air is in the books, and we look ahead to the World Jamboree 2019.
CQ Jamboree, this is Oscar Echo 3, Bravo Lima Sierra. Oscar Echo 3, Bravo Lima Sierra, listening through.
Oscar Echo 3, Bravo Lima Sierra, this is Whiskey Bravo 7, Oscar Echo Papa, Reno, Nevada, USA.
There was a lot of activity on the bands during JOTA weekend, and a lot of people participated that maybe thought they wouldn't. Now is the time to file your report of your activity. Even if you didn't register your station, or maybe you only worked one JOTA station, we want your report in our records for the accuracy of the annual report. Head over to k2bsa/jota-station-report to file right now. The next big adventure in radio scouting will be happening in early August next year, and this will be the World Jamboree 2019 occurring at the Summit Bechtel Reserve in West Virginia. balloon launches, ARDF, ARIS, and demonstration stations for HF Satellite, SOTA, and Digital are some of the activities planned. If you're interested in aiding our efforts at the World Jamboree or finding out more information about the operation plans, head over to our landing page for it at na1wj.net. For more information on radio scouting, please visit our website at k2bsa.net. For Amateur Radio Newsline and the K2BSA Amateur Radio Association, this is Bill Stearns, NE4RD.
How do hams help an old established observatory mark 175 years of operation? A special event, of course.
It's nowhere near as old as the stars and planets, but at 175 years of age, the Cincinnati Observatory Center is one of the Western Hemisphere's oldest observatories still in operation. To mark its anniversary, the Okayan Amateur Radio Society is hosting special event station K8SCH on the HF bands from November 9th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time through November 11th at 11:59 p.m. Club members will be working from their home QTHs throughout the weekend, and the club itself will be on the premises of the observatory on the 9th of November between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. local time. The observatory has the distinction of having had former President John Quincy Adams preside at its dedication November 9, 1843, when he helped lay the cornerstone of the original building. Though the observatory is now at a different location further east that takes it away from the city pollution, it has been designated as a National Historic Landmark and still uses the original 11-inch MERS and Mahler refractor telescope. Be listening, and perhaps you too can make contact from afar with what was originally called the Lighthouse of the Sky. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jack Parker, W8ISH.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Jim Dameron, N8TMW, Bill Stearns, NE4RD, Jack Parker, W8ISH, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We're coming down from a solar storm from some fast solar wind, just in time to get ready for another one. That story and more in the Shorty this week. Space weather this week has gotten very exciting. We had some fast wind from a corona hole that had rotated into the Earth strike zone, but it sent us the storm almost a day late. Nonetheless, it was worth the wait because it bumped us up to G2 storm levels and brought Aurora clear down to Wyoming. Meanwhile, we've kind of been taking some time to settle down. We're at unsettled conditions now, but it's not going to last for long because we have yet another coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone. And just like the last one, this one is also a repeat offender. But this time, this coronal hole has grown into some weird kind of shape here. It looks a little bit like a horseshoe or maybe an H. You tell me what it looks like, but because of its strange shape, it may actually give us a 1-2 punch with some couple bursts of fast wind, and that could bump us up to storm levels starting around late on the 9th, most likely into the 10th, and possibly with the second punch hitting even on the 11th. Now, I'm not expecting this storm to be nearly as strong as the other one. I don't expect G2 storm levels, but it could give us some decent aurora show yet again. Switching to our solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from that fast wind from that corona hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone. At high latitudes, we're expecting at least minor storm conditions with even about a 60% chance of a major storm starting around the 9th to the 10th. It's kind of hard to say because this corona hole is shaped so strangely. If we get it a 1-2 punch, we might even get storming conditions lasting in through the 11th before things begin to calm down, especially at high latitudes. Now, at mid-latitudes, we're only expecting active conditions, but we've got a decent chance for minor storm conditions to hit. And again, this may linger until about Sunday and into Monday before things really begin to calm down. It's hard to tell, but we're not expecting nearly the strength of the storm that we had just less than a week ago, but it should still be enough to give us some decent aurora, possibly down to mid-latitudes. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is still in the green when it comes to solar flares. We have a spotless sun right now, and this means good news for you GPS users. You should have great GPS reception on Earth's day side. Now, we do have a region that is rotating into Earth view off of the sun's east limb. It's pretty dim right now, and I don't know if it's going to get a number designated by NOAA, but it is upping the solar flex just a little bit. We are back into the 70s for solar flux, which means marginal radio propagation for you shortwave responders and amateur radio operators. This is wonderful news. I've been hearing some good communication on 10 meters and 20 meters, by the way, this past week. So this should boost it up just a little bit more. And these conditions should last easily over the next few days, possibly over the next week. Now, because we are at solar minimum, we are getting a higher penetration of cosmic rays than we normally would. So you frequent flyers, and this does include the air crew who fly more than 800 hours annually and who fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are in the marginal range for radiation dose right now, and this does include the prenatal passengers. So please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week is extremely exciting. We just came down from a moderate level solar storm that brought Aurora clear down to Wyoming, and we're gearing up for yet another storm. Now, this coming solar storm probably won't be as strong as the one we just had, but it could be enough to bump us back up to storm levels starting late on the 9th, most likely into the 10th, and possibly lingering into the 11th before things begin to settle down a little bit. It's hard to tell with this very strange shape of a coronal hole we're getting. So, you Aurora photographers, keep your batteries charged because we might even get some shows briefly at mid-latitudes. Now, you amateur radio and shortwave radio operators, well, you guys should be pretty happy. We're back into the marginal range for radio propagation, and this could easily last for the next week, and we have that bright region that's rotating into Earth view. So who knows, this may even last almost 2 weeks before things begin to tank again. And then as far as you GPS users are concerned, well, you know, things on the Earth's day side look really good. The reception should be very clean. And then on Earth's night side, well, as long as you stay away from the aurora during the solar storm on the 9th through the 11th, and as long as you stay away from those dawn dust terminators that are always a bit tricky, your GPS reception should be pretty nice. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Thank you, Dr. T. Of course, you need to follow her on Twitter, by all means, at Tamitha Scove. She will give you almost up to the second reports on what's going on with the solar weather. And, you know, it means a lot to what we do here with amateur radio. And also shortwave listeners, our folks over at WTWW Shortwave at 5085 and 15.810, they're simulcasting the audio to Ham Nation right now, as they do every week. And yeah, they're upwards of 100,000 watts, maybe sometimes just a little bit more. Now, of course, you can't run 100 kW. We're limited to 1.5 kW. But with contesting season in full swing, you might want to give your station a little bit of an edge with some DX engineering fire in the wire, like maybe some receive antenna system headsets and amplifiers, perfect for your needs on a budget. And DX engineering has a great selection of amps that deliver stable, efficient power required to operate with authority. Authority, I say, from 160 through 6. Here are just a couple of popular models. The Acom 2100. Legal limit, 1,500 watt HF linear amp gives you QRO operation and a manually tuned RF amp with several automatic protection circuits. It's designed to let you quickly change between three antennas. It's user-friendly. Amplifier features straightforward operation. Now, from across the pond, RM Italy has the BLA 600 wideband HF 6-meter linear amp. Solid state, up to 500 watts SSB PEP, large multi-speed fans keep it cool and running at peak efficiency for CW QSK operation. The BLA 600 gives you fast, silent pin diode switching. And a quality headset goes a long way. It's an essential part, in fact, of any contester's toolkit. DX Engineering offers high-performance models for serious contenders. The Hyalt Pro 7 headsets, I love mine, comes with passive noise-canceling capabilities, unique audio balance control, phase reversal switches to dig out weak signals. The Hyalt Pro 7 gives you well-insulated ear pads and innovative acoustic design that blocks out background noise, and boy, does it. Plus a boom mic that can be used on either the right or the left ear. The W1 competition headset It's the latest offering from NRAD. It only weighs 13 ounces. The W1 has cupped over-the-ear earpieces that won't hurt after hours of use, thick rubberized foam padding that molds to your head, even if it's pointed like mine. Great response speakers, a 600-ohm dynamic microphone element on an adjustable long boom, so much more. Go to dxengineering.com, enter headset to find the right one for your shack. And, of course, you can elevate your game for the next challenge with DX Engineering's active receiving antenna systems and accessories. The four-square complete array package gives excellent weak signal reception. Uniquely designed receive vertical antennas are vastly superior to traditional active antennas in both signal handling and feed line decoupling. The array uses four symmetrically spaced elements to give you switching for a four-direction receiving antenna system. It includes receive antennas, controller, and a switch, time variable sequencer, cables, connectors, tools, everything you need. Also available from DX Engineering, the Receive 8 Circle Package, reversible beverage systems, receive preamplifiers, receiver guard, active magnetic loop, receiving antenna, the NCC2 receive antenna phasing system, and a whole lot more. And you know, DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern are shipped the same day. With proven products and expert advice, DX Engineering is helping you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7, 365 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. And if you don't have a good headset, man, you're just not hearing what you need to hear. This Pro 7, I'm telling you, it's the stuff. This is what you need right here. Love mine. And I know Valerie uses hers as well in contesting. It's a great headset, isn't it, Val?
And to get mine, hang on.
I think you dropped yours on your microphone. You didn't hurt it, did you? Did you drop the diamond out of your ring again?
There you go.
That big crash. There it is.
There's mine. You know what? I was just watching that ad. My ham shack is, I swear, a DX Engineering showroom. I don't know if you
Pretty
can
much.
See my CC8A right there.
Mm-hmm.
I got two ACOMs sitting over here.
Why don't they just put you on the cover? You should be, I mean, you're pretty enough to be a cover girl. Don't put any gear on there. Just put your face.
Everything you were advertising, I swear, we have in the shack here.
Got it. That's all right.
Swear by their stuff. We love it.
That's good stuff. Yep.
I'm back, guys. Woohoo. Sorry I had a lot going on, and I miss seeing you guys, and I'm so glad to be back. Miss seeing all your faces, guys. I'm going to start a new series called Giving Back. And each time I'm going to focus on a different way we can give back, because hopefully this hobby has changed your life like it has mine. So this week, I'm going to talk to you about giving back and opening your shack up to show new hams or hams who've never contested before and bring them into your shack. So go ahead and show that. All right, I'm going to start a new series called Giving Back. And I'm going to focus on different aspects and ways you can give back. And this week, we're going to focus on contesting and becoming a contest Elmer. I'd like to start off by first dispelling the myth that you need to be one of those big gun stations like what Jerry and I have here, or even bigger like my late great friend Paul Bittner, Whiskey Zero AIH. You don't need to be a super contest station to open up your shack and bring in a new ham, or maybe someone who's been in the hobby a while but never tried contesting. Now, maybe they have very limited HF equipment or no HF equipment at all. Maybe they have a nice station but never contested before. So feel free to open up your shack, no matter how small. Try having a new ham come in and contest with you. Now, N0AX Ward Silver, he opens his shack up and he teaches people how to contest, and they get hooked into the aspect of contesting and become even more involved in the hobby. Our friend N9TK Jim Warner, he opens up his shack for special event stations, and he does it for field day each year, so it doesn't have to be anything spectacular. They have nice stations, but it's not, you know, top of the line. And who's this guy? Anybody know who that is? I'll give you a hint. His name's Bu Frohart. And if you still can't figure it out, his first name is Elmer. Now, he was the real inspiration to come up with the name Elmer. Now, Bud, or Elmer, he was very active in RAMS, which is the Radio Amateur Megacycle Society in Illinois. And Bud, or Elmer, was always helping newcomers to the hobby. So Rod Newkirk, who was a friend of Elmer, used the name Elmer in his March 1971 House DX column in QST, when referring to somebody who helped mentor. little bit of trivia for you there. Unfortunately, Bud became a silent key in 2016. So again, you can be a little pistol station and have new hams come in and learn how to contest. And just remember, success comes in all sizes. Perfection is not required. And Jim Warner, I didn't put that under your name for any reason. It just happened to fall that way, just so you know. And you never know. You could have a real impact on someone's life by opening up your doors and teaching them contesting. And hopefully they fall in love with it as much as you do. So why should you be an Elmer? Well, most likely, if you're a contester, somebody did it for you. They opened up their doors. You came in, learned all about it. So it's now your chance to give back and do it for somebody else. Pay it forward. Plus, they say, any teacher will tell you, if you want to learn or perfect something, teach it. And you may just end up making a friend for life in the process. And down the road, as you start to better your station and make it more competitive, they might come in and help you get that all set up and get new antennas up or whatever needs doing. Now, we're all aging here. And some of those contests are pretty hard to keep up with, especially the 48-hour ones. So if you open up your shack, they're going to help split that out so you can take a nap while they work and vice versa. So it makes it a lot easier if you have some help, especially with the really long contest. And last, you might be getting a little bored or lost a little excitement in the contesting thing because you've been doing it for so long. Well, bringing someone new in is going to help spark and rekindle your interest in contesting. So you decided to bring an Elmer in or two. So where do you start? First of all, pick a smaller, easier contest. Don't start out with one of the big ones or a sweepstakes with the hard exchanges. Pick something easy. And I'll go into a little bit of that later. Offer maybe one or two hams at your next club meeting the opportunity to come do that. You want to try and keep like a 1-to-1 Elmer to new op ratio if you can, maybe a 1-to-2. So keep it small. Don't bring in the whole club for a big open house. And you have the choice of whether to choose multi-single or multi-two. Multi-two is easier from the standpoint that you don't have to worry about band change violations. But if you think that they can handle that, I would go for the multi-single. It'll just make you a little more, place a little higher in the ranks competitively. But you're not in it to win it. You're in it to teach it. So keep that in mind. Now, you're going to have to do a little bit to prepare, not too much more than what you normally would do. But the first rule, make sure you label everything. Because if your ham shack is like our ham shack, there's at least one or two labels in here that don't pertain. You know, it might say it's a 20-meter stack when it's really for 40 meters or something. So label it all. And then you're going to want to provide them a little cheat sheet because it's their first time. And I'll go over kind of what things to put on a cheat sheet in a little bit, too. But make sure all your software is updated and all your equipment is working. Nothing worse than having somebody come into contest and your station's not working and you're having some issues. So nothing turns them off more than that. Have them arrive early so they can go over a dry run, give them a tour of what antennas and how to do this and that, and go over the rules, especially if there's band change violations and things like that. And then beforehand, you're going to want to get a couple Elmer trainee accessories, which I'll go over in a little bit as well. So the contest begins. So first off, you all want to have the mindset that you're there to teach and not win, just yet anyway. Maybe the second and third time you guys start working on being more competitive. Make sure you keep their operating shifts short and frequent so they can get as much operating time as they want, but you don't want to overwhelm them. So 1 hour sessions work really nice, especially when they're starting off. And you're going to want to sit with them at first and make sure you're a little one-on-one and encourage them to ask questions. And always keep a pen and a notepad right next to the logging software. Even when you're not Elmering, when you're contesting anytime, always keep a notepad handy because you are going to need it. Now make sure after the contest you appreciate their successes no matter how small. Maybe they were able to work 10 guys in a row on search and pounce on the first try. Little things like that even help them out. Have a little one-on-one review and talk about what they can work on for next time and what they did really good. And make sure it's very encouraging. It's cool to keep some stats on how they did. They love to see their stats, how fast their rate was, things like that, what states or countries they worked. They love that stuff. And always give them a certificate or a thank you note or something to show that you appreciate that they came out that day. And should you win any awards, when we have guest ops, whenever I win any of these plaques you see on the wall behind me, we order and pay extra so that all the guest stops get plaques as well. So that's always a nice touch to do. Some people do shirts too. Cool contesting shirts or something like that. That's always fun too. And here's a list of some ideal contests that would work when you're getting new contesters into your shack. State QSO parties work great, especially the larger ones like California and Florida. California, they give out wine if you do well. How cool is that? Or those multi-state QSO parties like the New England or the 7QP QSO parties. North American QSO party, June VHF, CQ Worldwide VHF, ARRL 10 meters. Something where you give your name in your state or your name in your grid. Those are super easy and still can be a lot of fun. You don't need to be made of money to get some Elmer accessories. That first one's $21, most expensive thing on this page right here, and that allows you up to have up to four headphones splitting off a signal, and you each have your own volume control. You don't want to be at high volume or you just listen to them in the background. That would be kind of nice. You can get the simple splitter for $4.99. You're at the same volume your new guy's at. And then you get the VGA splitter. I highly recommend this. So you can have two monitors using the N1MM or whatever logging software you use. So maybe you're going to help him log. So if you're both listening and you can log while he's doing it and he can see what you're doing, or if you need to fix a mistake on the fly, you can do that with that VGA monitor splitter. We have one and we use it a lot. And last but not least, make a cheat sheet for them. One thing we do right on the monitor, right in front of them, we put the call sign and the exchange right there for everybody to see, because they're so used to giving their call sign out and not your call sign. So that has to be real front and center for them so they don't accidentally give out the wrong call sign. But you want to also do, if it's, you know, whatever the exchange is, maybe you're doing a state QSO party, you want to have a list of all the counties there so it's easy for him to see what the abbreviations are, or a grid square map, or whatever the thing that pertains to whatever your exchange is in particular for that contest. Also, it's good to have the quick band change rules there. They have 10-minute rule or 8 band changes an hour or whatever it is. And then you want to have a band change checklist, so you don't want them destroying your equipment. So if he's going to go from 20 to 40, have a little quick checklist on everything he needs to do and the order he needs to do it to make sure he doesn't wreck your equipment. Also, good idea to have a frequency privilege limit list for each band. You know, you can't transmit below here on this band and above that, you know, so because this is first time for some of them on HF. All right, I'm going to leave you with a quote from the one man I would leave Jerry for if he were alive today. I think he's the best, Nikola Tesla. "My brain is only a receiver in the universe. There is a core from which we obtain knowledge, strength, and inspiration. I have not penetrated into the secrets of this core, but I know that it exists." I think he's talking about Elmer's. And so hopefully you guys are going to have some people come into your shack and contest. Now, what kind of a leader would I be if we weren't going to open our place up? So we're going to do that again. We don't know which contest yet. Jerry and I are working on planning some trips and stuff, and we want to get those locked in before we figure out which contest. But we are going to send out a plea. Anybody who wants to come and learn how to contest with us, send us an email and we'll draw a name and blah, 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 and we'll have you come and hang out for the weekend and learn how to contest. So look forward to, I'll let you know when we solidify that. Also, I have some news to report. We normally don't report a lot of silent keys, but Reverend Paul Bittner, if you want to show that slide, he was the one that married Jerry and I in June. Whiskey Zero Alpha India Hotel. Well, he just passed away last week in a tower climbing accident. But the ARRL Foundation set up a Paul Bittner or W0AIH Memorial Scholarship Fund. So they do have a GoFundMe page up if anybody wants to help out and help some young kids out through. And ARRL Foundation is taking care of supporting this. So if you go into GoFundMe and search W0AIH, I'm sure it'll come up. But I do have the link in the description. I did make a memorial tribute video on my YouTube channel. So if you go to my YouTube channel and find that tribute, in the description is a link to that Memorial Scholarship Fund as well. So rest in peace, Paul Bittner. You are one of the best and a great Elmer and leader and a great ambassador to this hobby. We're going to miss you. So I think I'd normally hand it to Amanda, but I heard she's out clubbing right now.
There you go.
Good evening. I'm actually here, Val. Nice to see you. Thanks for being on tonight. And I'm here with the Royal Gorge Amateur Radio Club. And Jeff's going to pan around here so you guys can see everyone. Say hello. Hi, everyone wave. Hi. And they're freaking out because they can also see themselves on the big screen that we have going on. So they're just saying, what's going on here? And the second thing, while you guys have some of your hands up, I'd like all the veterans in the room to raise their hands, please. We'd like to thank these wonderful gentlemen for all their service.
Absolutely.
If I get out of the shot.
No.
All right. So I came to this club tonight. This is my local club. Jeff and I have been members for how many years now, Jeff? Maybe 6 years or something like that. Jeff's even been president. And guess what? I come down here tonight to tell everyone we're going to do some Ham Nation stuff from here. And lo and behold, most of them don't even know what Ham Nation is. It's a shocker. So I've not been doing my job around here. They're all happy to be here tonight. Some had to leave early. And if you guys, Don, Val, you guys want to say hi to everyone here?
Hey, everybody. Good to have you guys on tonight.
Hey, welcome.
Dale, nice to see you tonight, too. Welcome back.
It's like a reunion episode.
Appreciate it.
We're all here.
It is a reunion episode. It looks like Bob and Gordo had to go early tonight, but wanted to see if anyone in my audience had any questions for the Ham Nation group. Bob does. Okay, let's go over to Bob.
Is it possible that we have a show of hands for those who've been amateur radio operators for more than 25 years?
Okay, he wants everyone to show their hands if they've been a ham radio operator for more than 25 years.
30 years.
30 years?
40 years.
How about 40 years?
50 years.
How about 50 years?
Who knows Marconi?
And who grew up with Tesla? Okay. we got it there. Listen, you guys, I've cut these people a little bit late tonight, so I'm going to let you guys go ahead and wrap it up there. But I really thank you for letting me be on tonight. And thanks to this wonderful team behind me who keeps these repeaters up and running around here. 73, everyone. Have a good night.
Good to see you guys on tonight, Amanda. Thanks for bringing the club to us. That's
Amanda.
Just awesome.
Thank
awesome
you.
Stuff. All right. I think that's going to just about do it for us tonight. Looks like I think everybody else has pretty much flown the coop, and it's just left to us to close this meeting of the beautiful people. And, of course, you're invited as well, so... we'll get out of here and we'll say thank you for being here, and we'll see you all back again next week here on Ham Nation on the Twit Network. So everybody wave. We'll see y'all next week. 7-3, everybody. Good night.